Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host today, Randall White. Vicky Gonzalez is on assignment. Just ahead, we'll dive into election issues like cryptocurrency and online political ads. Plus, we'll explore new ways to celebrate Sacramento's diverse world of food. But first, California's response to the spread of MPV, that's the virus that causes monkeypox, varies depending on where you live in the state. One city council member from Tracy, who recently recovered from the illness, says healthcare support in the Central Valley for this declared state emergency lags far behind the rest of California. Here are how the numbers currently break down. As of last Thursday, there were 2,600 confirmed cases in California, and that total is expected to climb when new numbers are released later today. San Francisco and Los Angeles currently account for well over half of those. Sacramento County, which was the first in California to report an official case back in the spring, had 107 cases at last count. San Joaquin and Fresno counties each with 11. The Central Valley has a minority of cases, as you can see, leading some to say they're concerned communities in this region are being overlooked or flat out ignored. Kristen Wong is the health and policy reporter for Cal Matters. She has new reporting on this issue and joins us now here on Insight to share what she's learned. Kristen, always good to speak with you.
It's always good to speak with you too, Randall.
So you interviewed Tracy City Council member Dan Tavares, Areola, for your story. And he said something striking. He called the state's response to the monkeypox outbreak in the Central Valley as being, quote, decades behind, close quote, California's big cities. Did he elaborate on what he meant by that?
Yeah, I think Areola was really highlighting that the Central Valley is chronically under-resourced in all aspects in California. The challenges are a lot different than in cities. So sort of a one-size-fits-all approach to disseminating resources doesn't really work there. Public health has been stretched all over the state in the past 2.5 years, but in places where your departments might only have like 2 or 3 people on the team and the geographic spread is so much bigger, they have a harder job to do. Right. So in these communities that can be rural and more spread apart, it's not always possible to get people to get to the city where the resources are, and it's more difficult to coordinate a response to everything, include much less an outbreak like COVID or like monkeypox. And it's also harder for LGBTQ folks to have sort of like a unified voice and sense of community that helps them sort of elevate what their needs are.
And let's dig into all of that a little bit with a personal story. Tell us about Luna Lockhart, a 25-year-old from Fresno.
Yeah. So about a month ago, Lockhart drove from Fresno to San Francisco to get a monkeypox vaccine. Lockhart's part of the queer community in Fresno, and they left around midnight on a Tuesday and drove 3.5 hours with their roommate to San Francisco General Hospital. They got there around 4 a.m. on Wednesday and joined about 400 other people waiting in line
at
to
that
get
time.
A monkeypox vaccine. Yes.
Wow.
And I know. It's crazy. I mean, even in the places where there is, you know, far more vaccine resources, there's still, you know, a huge demand for it.
Right. Do we know why the state has prioritized vaccine distribution the way that it has?
You know, speaking to a lot of public health professionals, the answer that I got is that because vaccines are so few and far between, that sort of their only option is to distribute it in areas where they know they have a problem, where there are a lot of cases, versus areas where there might be a problem in the future. And so sort of the gold standard for public health is that you would want to prevent those places in the future from becoming a problem, but the vaccine resources, just the supply from the federal government has been so limited that they didn't really have a choice.
And Kristen, last night I spoke with a friend of mine, a former San Francisco news anchor and reporter, Hank Plant. And I'm just going to mention that he's won top journalism awards, including a Peabody for covering the AIDS epidemic. So he has a history with this sort of coverage. And he said to me, and this is a quote, the Central Valley isn't where the problem is. Health officials are right to target communities with lots of gay men for vaccination. Are you hearing others besides the health officials that you spoke with express those same thoughts?
I think in other communities that not necessarily the health officials, that there is sort of a lot of fear and they don't necessarily feel the same way. And I think they're also looking towards the future that, you know, I think one thing that Ariola mentioned to me is that we need to recognize that LGBTQ people live everywhere in the state. And so we can't forget about the communities and let it become a bigger problem later.
Yeah.
So kind of kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, I get that. So let's talk about the advocates on that side. Why are they saying that they need more support and more vaccines in these areas where like an entire county might only have 11 cases documented?
Mm-hmm. Well, it really goes back to the fact that the Central Valley has far fewer resources in all aspects than other areas of the state. It also, you know, these places tend to be more conservative than cities in California, and finding queer-friendly healthcare providers is more difficult. And not every county or town has a Pride Center, and it's a lot harder to have a strong sense of community and disseminate information to people, much less get them to come in for vaccines. I know with COVID, the director of the Fresno Pride Center told me that back in March of 2020, when COVID hit, they had a lot of people still trying to get into the center when it was closed, who had never even heard of the pandemic, had never heard of this new virus called COVID. And so I think that really, you know, she told me that story to illustrate, you know, how much harder it is for them to get even just information out to the people who need it so that people can take precautions and do things that when you don't have a vaccine are a lot more important to preventing the spread.
With COVID, of course, there's many ways to help prevent the disease, including vaccines. Are vaccines the only way to contain the monkeypox outbreak?
The answer is sort of, it's complicated. Yes or yes and no. Because monkeypox has, because of the way it spreads and the much longer sort of latency period before you start to show signs, it is theoretically a lot easier for health departments to do contact tracing, to interview somebody who has it about everybody that they've been in contact with in the past, you know, few weeks or month, and then have those people do a precautionary isolation. The problem is that health departments don't have enough people. When we talk about resources for health departments, oftentimes we're talking about staff. And so contact tracing is very personnel and employee heavy. And so because they don't have enough people to do that sort of on the ground legwork, vaccines are the primary strategy for preventing further spread.
And we should mention the vaccine being used is the smallpox vaccine, is it not? It's been shown to have some control over the virus that causes monkeypox.
Yes, it's in the same family as smallpox. And so the FDA has allowed a vaccine that would traditionally be used for smallpox to be used for monkeypox.
Is that being ramped up? You know, now that California has declared this state of emergency, I'm wondering about maybe some tangible changes we could see in the Central Valley in terms of access to vaccines and treatments.
I think the big announcement that's not necessarily related to the California state of emergency, but the federal one, is the splitting of the Jynneos vaccine into 5 doses. That's going to make a huge difference in terms of how many people can get an initial vaccination, at least, and get some form of protection. But at the state level, it also frees up a lot of money and allows health departments to redirect staff and funding streams to the monkeypox outbreak. I know San Diego said that they're spending about $90,000 per week on the monkeypox response. And usually public health spending is pretty notoriously categorical. So if you have HIV funds, you are not allowed to let those workers respond to monkeypox. So the state of emergency gives them a lot more flexibility.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio today. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with CalMatters reporter Kristen Wong about monkeypox and the vaccine availability in the Central Valley, which is not great for some of the people experiencing the illness there. Senator Scott Wiener from San Francisco and others are trying to make monkeypox to not be labeled a disease of the LGBT community because it can infect anyone, as we know. What is the sense about how this disease is being treated in the Central Valley, especially in the more conservative areas, Kristen?
I think the fear there is that it's much more likely to get stigmatized than in the cities, where, you know, as you said, it is really important to note that monkeypox can be, it's not an STD. It's just transmitted through close sort of skin-to-skin contact, and anybody can get it. But because of that fear of stigmatization, I suspect that that's hampered some health departments' responses. Before Fresno even had cases, I was hearing from employees, like, you know, real genuine concerns about how they were going to respond to this and how are they going to do this if they don't have a Pride Center. But 2 months later, once Fresno had cases, LGBTQ centers that I talked to still hadn't heard anything from the health department. And I think, you know, that messaging is particularly difficult. I don't even know necessarily that there's consensus among LGBTQ folk about how public health should be talking about this. I know one of the few Pride centers in the Central Valley didn't even want to talk to me for the story because they didn't want this to be labeled, you know, a quote unquote gay disease.
Kristen, I ran into that back in, I can't remember now if it was May or June. I was working on a similar type of story and I wasn't hearing back from anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. But there are also, I mean, but there are people on the other side, including, you know, people in the community who are state officials who say that if we refuse to talk about this, it's just going to get worse. It's just going to be like HIV and AIDS back right? in the '80s. So it's really hard.
Mm-hmm. What is the California Department of Public Instruction doing about monkeypox in schools? Is there any real concern there?
I don't think there's been any statewide guidance for public schools yet, at least not at the elementary school level. There are 2 pediatric cases in the state and then 4 more of people who are under 18. So the messaging has really been, and these have been cases of children who live in the same household as mm-hmm. as an adult who had monkeypox. So it's really that sort of close contact, sharing of sheets, towels when you're using the bathroom and things like that. So the messaging really is that risk is low. I think parents are, you know, right to be concerned, but that the risk for children is low. I think the bigger risk is for universities. And universities are starting to issue guidance because there you have people who are, you know, living in communal living, not necessarily, you know, going to class together. You're also living together and sharing the dining hall and sharing bathrooms and common spaces and things like that.
One of the huge problems with COVID is that the virus keeps mutating. Is there any concern at this point that monkeypox could mutate and start spreading in different ways?
Monkeypox does not mutate as fast as COVID. I think there's started to be some studies, early studies of slight variations, but it doesn't seem to really be changing how it's spreading in the US. And the US is so far, if you want to call it lucky, that we didn't get the more serious strain of monkeypox that has caused fatalities historically in other countries.
Yeah, and this is a disease that's been around for a while, and mostly concentrated in some countries in Africa, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you spoke a little bit about contact tracing. How is that being used?
Yeah, so contact tracing is, I had mentioned where you talk to all of the close contacts of somebody. I think it's counties are doing the best that they can. San Francisco County, I think the Mercury News had reported that San Francisco County has all but given up on contact tracing because they just have too many cases and too few people to do that. But in places like the Central Valley, where there are few cases, that is definitely a viable strategy that mm-hmm. you can sort of, they call it, you know, encircling the cases that you can get to. If you have few enough cases, you can get to everybody in time to stop it.
As the health and policy reporter at CalMatters, I imagine you're following developments in monkeypox closely. What are you watching for in the coming days and weeks?
I think the biggest thing is going to see it. Last Friday, the health department mentioned that they were going to move forward with the splitting of the vaccine doses. So I think the biggest thing to watch is those vaccination numbers. Is it really increasing access? Are more people getting vaccinated? And then following that, are we going to start seeing a reduction in cases? I know some epidemiologists I spoke to last week said that it was a little bit too soon to tell whether our strategies were being effective, and that we should know in the next 2 or 3 weeks whether or not we're sort of leveling off.
Is there a hint of optimism?
I think so. Yes and no. I mean, I think in some ways people are pessimistic because they're tired of COVID.
No, I know.
But in other ways, you know, I do think that health departments and hospitals and everybody in healthcare has learned some lessons from COVID, and they are prepared to do this.
Journalist Kristen Wong covers health and policy for CalMatters. Thank you so much for sharing your latest reporting with us today. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And as a cyclist of many decades, I love the bicycle over your shoulder.
I live in Davis, so right? It's obligatory.
Of course it is, right? I'm speaking to Kristen via Zoom, and I can see just over her shoulder. Kristen, thanks again.
Of course.
Up next, the Fair Political Practices Committee is California's election regulator. We'll learn about the campaign issues it's navigating heading into, we got the midterms just right around the corner, as well as new regulations surrounding cryptocurrency. And then a bit later, we'll whet your appetite with an exploration of Sacramento's food scene. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station. Cap Radio, I'm Randall White.